Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm bringing the bathing suit cakes.
You are?
Regardless of how cold it is.
I don't think I'm going to.
They have a nice pool there. I'm going to take a dip. What do we do with all our time? It's not like we sit there after we do the show.
Yeah.
And go into the clubhouse.
No.
And mine for 100 interviews. We used to try and do that. And we'd like get rejected by Strasburg. We'd get 2 minutes with Bryce.
Yeah, it was no fun. It was like pulling teeth. I think I'm going to try to rendezvous with our friend Dave Richard, who lives about an hour away. I think we might.
But you're going to play cards.
I think we might meet. This is a big surprise. We may meet up at a casino and see flops and grab a bite.
If you were just doing the lunch portion and not playing cards, I might join you.
That could happen.
Because I'm appreciative.
It's very fluid.
Of what Dave has done for us over the years. Great guest. Love talking fantasy football with him. But if you guys are going to take it to the casino,
I mean, we could go eat someplace at a casino and then head back. It doesn't matter. I mean, that could just be the rally point.
I know you. You get to that casino, you're not going to bounce out in 45 minutes.
No, you're most likely right.
This is like Cakes' Super Bowl because he's meeting Dave. So all he's going to do is talk DFS with him.
No, Dave doesn't need to bring his work.
You're at a poker room.
Yeah, but again, like if JP wants to come along, we could just meet up and grab a burger or something and part ways.
I think you're looking forward to this more than anything else in the trip.
I don't know if that's the case.
Because all you do is bring it up every single time.
I felt bad that last year we were down there and I must have tweeted something out while we were there. And Dave was like, thanks for letting me know. You're basically an hour away. So I
that
felt
was
like,
just
you know
an aside, though. You didn't have to take it personally. You know what I mean?
I know, but I just felt
it's a good thing to do.
He's a good dude.
Like
nice
said,
guy.
If you guys just hook up for the lunch portion, then I'd probably be willing to do it. But I know that if it's in the casino, Cakes isn't going to emerge for like 8 or 9 hours.
What we could do is we could go to that casino, meet up with Dave, break bread, then we could drive back. I could drop you at the Hilton West Palm, and then I could drive to the Palm Beach Kennel Club, which is, I believe, 2.5 miles away, and hang out with all the oldsters and see the frops.
Or you could always invite him to the woods.
We could do that as well. That could be the move.
I don't know. I'm not into planning it out like that. I'm not the plan is get there, figure out what I'm going to do.
Get there safely, get wheels down at West Palm Beach, and then we'll figure out what we're doing. We'll figure out the plan.
Do
from
a couple
there.
Shows. I'm sure we'll interview Davey Martinez. We had him on the show last year.
I will not make the mistake of wearing shorty pants to the ballpark for the show at 6 a.m.
Bring like a friggin' North Face jacket out there.
I will wear jeans and I will wear like a quarter zip or something that I can peel off once it starts getting warm.
Right.
Because last year I wore shorts and flip-flops, and I was getting cankle jokes. It was butt cold. I'm just going to avoid that this year.
But that's
I'm
because,
avoiding that.
Look, you wouldn't have had the cankle jokes if it wasn't for the lack of the table skirt.
That's very true.
So we had this look on TV on the NBC Sports Washington side
awful
where
look.
You saw us,
just
and
the
you
table.
Just saw our shorts or whatever the hell we were wearing.
It couldn't have looked more low-budget.
Doug McKinney, bulletin here, we need the apron for the table. It's a must. I don't know if you're responsible
for that.
That
might not be on them. That might be on 106.7 The Fan.
Whoever's responsible, make sure that's stuffed into one of the bags.
Right. For who wants the exposure, 106.7 or NBC Sports Washington.
It doesn't matter. We have a blank tarp. It doesn't matter to me.
It's true.
Need something to cover up the cankles.
I'm looking forward to it because the weather here, I don't know, for whatever reason, it seems like this winter has been rougher than previous winters. And it's not like we've had 60 inches of snow. We haven't had a blizzard where we've had 2 feet of snow.
Do you think we're over, the kids missing school, or do you think there's going to be a few more days?
We've still got 2 weeks left in February. Probably through most of it. There might be, one random storm, in early March.
We do get late February, early March snowstorms.
Yeah. I don't think we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
We're pretty close. Not quite.
You're
though.
Not out of the woods, really, probably until about March 15th, another month.
So I got another month to dodge. How many more days does Montgomery County have in the.
That I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
I know they're nubbing
it. To get serious.
The three of us of Montgomery County, and I know they nubbed it it took me by surprise that spring break isn't even a week. It's not even a Monday through Friday anymore.
Right. Right.
They're giving them like Thursday, Friday, and then Monday.
It's a quickie.
Wow. So
that's a nubby spring break.
Short for them, yeah. So the last segment, Cakes was talking about coins. He's talked about it for years. You know, Cakes saves coins, and especially pennies pre what year?
1982 and prior.
Right.
Because they have more copper.
So
because at some point they're going to abolish the penny, and I'm going to be sitting on like $8 worth of
exactly.
copper that I can melt down.
So
take the Potomac metals.
We were sitting around the house one day, and my son told me that one of his buddies actually collects coins.
Okay.
And he was telling me all this money the guy makes, like buying and selling and flipping coins.
Okay.
And
you got intrigued.
Yeah, well, now you're talking.
Well, deep down, he used to go to baseball card shows.
Sure.
It's not that dissimilar. Right. So anyway, I knew that D had some coins. And my dad has a coin that he's, you know, just held on to. It's been passed down to him from his grandfather, whatever. And D's like, oh, yeah, I got a bunch, too. And she went, she pulled out this, like, crate, and there's a bunch of coins in there. And then we open up these boxes and stuff. And these silver dollars, I'm telling you, we had probably 20 to 30 of them. Most of them from the mid-1800s. Right?
What?
Oh, yeah.
That's quite a find.
Like 1864, is that considered a mid-1800s?
Yeah.
Right?
You basically had like Civil War era or a little bit past that.
So I'm looking at this and I'm going, well, this is it.
This is the
I'm retiring.
Right.
This is the bonanza.
Yeah, this is it.
So then we start taking pictures of the coins and we start sending them to Stevie's buddy. And he goes, yeah, that one's worth $9. That one's worth $18. I mean, nothing. Literally nothing.
Right.
And then she has some rolls of some pennies. I mean, we have pennies from the 1800s. Like, just, I mean, that's worth 8 cents, 7 cents. It's just a big scam. Now, there are some, apparently.
You got from the 1800s.
That's crazy.
Meanwhile, Cakes is keeping 1981.
That's from the 1800s?
Yeah.
That's
like,
insane.
Cakes, I'm telling you, over a dozen from the mid-1800s. And they weren't really, like, maybe they were worth, like, $20.
You have to play the really long game, apparently.
Yeah,
that's
from the 1200s. Or apparently there are some, like, rare coins.
Yeah.
If it had a certain, like, if it had an
a
S.
A defect.
If it had an S or something.
No, I know what you're talking about.
I don't even know what that means, but then that was, like, a rare one.
See,
but apparently we had
about
the
this.
Most popular coin
this,
in 1864.
This is probably why. Because I had forgotten about this. But at some point in my life, probably high school years, maybe middle school, I received a gift, I think from my grandparents, might have been from my parents, which was to encourage coin collecting. It was like a little book where you put the penny.
Yeah, like a portfolio. That
so anyway,
you pop the
that's
coins
a common
in.
Thing. So people have been doing this for years. So that's why there's not going to be this great value, especially for 1980
coin. Oh, I think
coin.
It has to do with the scarcity, supply and demand. That's as simple as that.
Right.
And so the coins that have been passed down, sure, they're like 150 years old, but they're not rare.
Right, because there's a zillion coin collectors.
They made a billion of them.
Right.
Yeah, but they have to be rare at this point, because how many other people have pennies from the 1860s?
Well, they made a billion of them. They're not rare.
They've
they're
been
just
passed
not rare.
Down.
You know
they're
what's
in
rare,
books.
Cakes? Some guy bought a Babe Ruth card at a store. The guy thought it was a fake.
Okay.
For $2. It's worth millions because there's one of two. That's rare.
That's pretty rare.
That's rare.
One out of two on the planet Earth, that is rare.
If Dina Bickle has 20 of them from 1864, they ain't rare.
But what might be rare, which you've talked about recently, is your Turkey Bowl jersey.
That's
rare.
But I guarantee you, if I took that Turkey Bowl jersey right now and got all of you dopes to sign it and put it on eBay, that thing's going to go for a pretty penny.
All the coins combined.
Of the coins.
If I'm signing it, I want a piece.
That's true. That's a good point.
You want my signature.
You just need to sign it yourself. You just sign it yourself.
Yeah, I can just ace you out and say, put my name on it.
Did you keep your game worn silly, or did you only keep the white one?
I think I just kept one of the two.
Yeah. I gave both of mine away.
Yeah. Well, you just gave away a couple G's.
You're in the business of giving away money.
A couple G's, I'll be distraught.
Oh, I bet you could get 1,000.
I bet you could get 1,000.
But you get 1,000.
You sign it
for your game worn silly.
You sign it, put it on eBay.
That's such garbage.
Guarantee you. There are some desperate P1s out there, JP.
JP, I signed a station jersey. This is Matt Valdez, and I got $100 for it.
This is Matt Valdez.
That's crazy.
Think about that.
Jason got $100 for signing his Ford promo script. This is Matt Valdez.
I know, it's crazy. I just can't believe
why
it.
Have we not turned that into a cottage industry? Like every Every single day.
Should be like
this
Pete Rose.
Outline. We should just sign the outline and put it on eBay and see what it fetches.
Yeah,
just do it every day.
We ever have a good deal. It doesn't become rare.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. We're
just figured it out.
We're oversaturating the market.
He struggled in Econ 101.
Supply and demand. I understand the basics.
All right, so let's maybe do one.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On the Mattress Warehouse Hotlines, our buddy Kevin McCarthy, entertainment reporter for Fox 5, who recently interviewed a big-time athlete. Who did you interview?
Ooh.
Tim Tebow, and I think I botched, like, I was trying to mention, like, his football and baseball thing, and I don't know that I got it accurate. I didn't realize there was Florida and Florida State when I was talking to him.
Oh, my God.
So I was just kind of like, well, I mean, I said Florida when I was mentioning this game, and I don't know that. I mean, I was looking back at the footage, and he corrected me, but I was like, oh, God.
Do you know what the Heisman Trophy even is?
Yes, I know the Heisman Trophy. No, by the way, he's a really nice dude. I mean, I don't know if you guys ever talked to him before, but he's like really, really nice.
I'm going to quiz you here. Give me the mascots for each of the teams. Florida State blank.
Well, I think one of them is an alligator. I know that. I have no idea what the other one is.
The Florida alligators.
Wait. Is there I know they're not the same thing.
No,
I just,
listen,
I
Ricky, listen. It's Florida Gators.
Gators,
you don't
right.
say Florida alligators. You say right. donkity-donk. And Florida State Seminoles.
Oh, I'm sure I've never heard of the Seminoles. I don't even know what that is.
You've never... It's an Indian tribe, Ricky.
Have you never witnessed the tomahawk chop?
No. Sorry. Wait, which one of those teams did Tebow play for? Florida State?
No. No.
I have no idea. I honestly, and I'm not doing a bit. I just didn't. When I was interviewing him, it was for this, he executive produced this movie called Run the Race, and I was there was a scene in the film, I guess, where the character goes out to a Florida game, and I just said Florida because I had no clue what the difference between the two was. and it's funny because like he's such a nice guy. Like, and then like in the middle of his answer, he's like, "Yeah, it was a Florida State game." Like, he didn't say it in a rude way, but he was like making sure that it was the correct information. I don't know his whole baseball thing too. I'm so confused as to what AAA, AA is, and I was like trying to figure out like where he was going and like. You know, because long story short, my wife and I, my father-in-law got tickets to this Bay Sox game last year, and I guess the day or two before the day he injured his hand, like pretty severely, and I think the day we were supposed to see him is the day he was getting surgery, so we didn't get to go to the game. We went to the game, but he wasn't there, and then so when I went and told him this whole story, like looked in the camera, like apologized to my wife and father-in-law, he was a super nice guy, but I couldn't tell you what AAA, and I just find it strange. Like the Orioles AAA team is in Norfolk.
Back up.
I don't get
back
it.
Up, back all up. Over the place.
Back up. You made Tim Tebow on camera apologize to your wife because he wasn't at his minor league baseball game that you had tickets for.
No, I didn't make him apologize. When I walked in, I told him the story about what we were going to the game, and my wife basically, my father-in-law was surprising Lauren because Lauren loves Tim Tebow, and she wanted to meet him in person and get like a baseball sign and a picture. And the day before, we had tickets months in advance. We were planning to go, and then I just told him the whole story, and then I was like, "Yeah, Damien and Lauren are their names," and he's like looked into the camera and like said a nice apology and sorry he couldn't be there. He was super nice about it. Big dude, by the way. That dude is huge.
He's ripped.
God. Like, because he got up to hug me and I almost like fell over. Like, it was like
how tall is he?
Mess.
Is he like 6'3"?
Oh, yeah. I'm 6'2.5", so I think he was definitely taller than me. If you look at the video, I'll text you guys the video. When he hugged me, like he's like just he's so large that like I disappear in the shot, like when he goes in to hug me. Like the guy is just huge. And then his wife, I guess, no, his fiance was there too. She came in to say hi to him.
She's like, not a looker, right?
She's gorgeous. Her
I think
name
she was
is
Miss Universe.
Demi. Yes. Yeah. I, he,
hey,
super
Kevin,
nice guy.
I have a question. Is Tim Tebow religious?
Of course, you know that. Of course he is. By the way, so again, I don't want to get into any minutiae here, but I don't understand why there are two double A, triple A things in baseball. I don't get that. Like, what do you mean?
Why do they have different levels? It's just a different level.
Like, but why is the team, like my father-in-law was texting last night, he goes, hey, we can go see Tim Tebow play because he's going to Syracuse or something like that for the Mets. I'm like, he's not playing for the Mets. And then I guess in Norfolk, they have an Orioles-based triple-A team.
Every team has...
You don't understand the minor league system.
Double-A, triple-A affiliated teams.
Didn't you have a dad?
Confusing.
I know you didn't play high school sports. In high school, there was like a freshman team, a JV team, and a varsity team.
Yeah, that's what the minor leagues are
like. So the minor leagues, you work your way up.
So like, if you're at a triple-A level team, you're one step away from being in the majors. You idiot!
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, why does Norfolk have the triple-A version of the Orioles?
Because,
that's like in Virginia.
Because every team has different affiliations. They have been spread across the country. I believe the Nats' newest triple-A affiliate is in Fresno. It's in California.
It makes no sense. Come on, Cakes, admit to me that makes no sense.
I mean, sometimes
it's just kind of the way it is. It's just accepted.
Usually they're aligned geographically. Usually they're kind of close to the parent team, but sometimes they're spread out.
AAA was a service that helps with your car. I don't understand.
Oh, now you're doing bad jokes.
That was a joke.
I knew that. What movies are you going to talk about today?
Well, there's the movie, like, I know Eric so well that when I saw the trailer for this movie, I said to myself, this is the ultimate Eric Bickle film. I mean, this is there's
science
nothing.
Fiction or something?
Alita Battle Angel.
Oh,
so, you know, this is Cyborgs, right, Eric? This is really, you know, right up your wheelhouse.
Stop for a second, Kevin. I want to ask AWOD what a cyborg is. Give us a definition of a cyborg.
A cyborg would be a human that's mixed with a robot. They like had to, you know, like iRobot, when they cut off the arm, they replaced the arm with a
robot.
You know, pretty good. That's pretty good.
Better than I would have done.
Yeah. Sized for Rosa Salazar, who's in this movie.
I don't even know who that is.
She's amazing. So did you guys see Bird Box?
Yes.
She was the girl that was like hooking up with Machine Gun Kelly in like the laundry room, and then they like ran out.
Right.
She's awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's amazing. So, I mean, long story short, I know you guys aren't interested in this film. It's Robert Rodriguez. So the guy directed this movie, did like Sin City and Desperado, El Mariachi, things like that. And essentially, Rosa Salazar plays this character through performance capture. So she's on set with dots all over her body, and Christoph Waltz's character essentially finds her in a junkyard. It takes place in the future.
He's a great actor.
Amazing
he's
actor.
He's really good.
Well, that was the cool thing is because Quentin Tarantino obviously put him on the map in the United States. He's a big actor, I believe, overseas. But he is now working with Rodriguez here, and Rodriguez and Tarantino are best friends. And obviously, you know, he was in Django and Inglourious Basterds. But he's great in this. I mean, Rosa Salazar is amazing. Eric, I don't think you would even care to see this movie, but I do think it's an amazing action film. So James Cameron produced it, co-wrote it. The dialogue is a little thin at times, but the IMAX 3D experience of this movie is beyond belief. I paid $18 to see it again yesterday for a second time just to see the IMAX 3D, and it was incredible.
According to Wiki, Rosa Salazar was born in D.C.?
Yeah, Silver Spring. She grew up in Silver Spring. I think she was born in D.C., grew up in Silver Spring. I talked to her about that.
Where'd she go to school?
I don't know the school. I'll have to go back and look at the interview. She told me about her entire growing up thing here because I don't know if you guys saw this on social media, but I went to New Zealand for this film, and I got to be directed by Robert Rodriguez on a stage. So basically, over the years, I've been telling you guys about this performance capture technology with Andy Serkis. And I got to actually do it myself. I got to go there to the studio that does that for Lord of the Rings and Avatar, and get into a suit with dots all over my body and be directed by Robert Rodriguez. So when you see Alita, or if you are going to see Alita, just know that that actress is there the entire time. Like, she's there on set the whole movie, essentially, and they make her character. It's the most photorealistic CGI I've ever seen on someone's face. It
What's
is unbelievable.
Rating?
I give it a 4 out of 5. Definitely worth
four
seeing.
Out of five.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that it might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I definitely think that the action sequences, the motorball sequences specifically, it sounds like AWOD is interested in seeing it. It's really well done. Yeah, it's really good. It's really well done.
Did you see anything else?
Yeah, I saw two other movies. I saw Happy Death Day to You, and I saw Isn't It Romantic. Which
Happy
one you guys want
to
hear
Day
about?
Happy Death Day to You is a sequel, right? Well, it looks like it's strictly for, like, 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
Well, Happy Death Day was a big success. This guy, Jason Blum, who produced these films, he's the one who produced, like, Paranormal Activity, Get Out, the new Halloween. He's really well known for making super cheap films and having them do really well. So let me give you an example. Happy Death Day 1 cost $4.8 million. It made $125 million. So the return on investment on this guy is amazing. I mean, remember, Paranormal Activity cost, what, $10,000? It made over almost $100 million.
Yes, Noaman would give every one of his projects a big thumbs up, Valdez, every single time.
He gets what, Blumhouse?
He gets green lit for every idea.
Well, you know why? Because he keeps things cheap. I mean, right? He produced Get Out. Get Out was a $5 million movie that made over a couple hundred million dollars. I mean, this guy he's a genius. And I think he forces his filmmakers to work for super cheap. I think the new Halloween movie cost $10 million to make. That movie made like $80 million opening weekend or something like that. I have to go back to the numbers. But, I mean, the guy's a genius. So if you saw Happy Death Day 1, basically premise was this girl keeps waking up. It's Groundhog Day. But with like almost like a scream type vibe to it. So she keeps dying over and over and over again, 11 times in the first one. And then this time in the sequel, it's kind of looping her back to that day, but there's a bigger twist that I won't get into. Cakes, I know you're a horror guy. I think you should watch the first Happy Death Day. I think you might actually like it. I was kind of in the same mindset you were when the trailer first came out. Like, I don't know if this is for me. It's, you know, a teenage horror movie. It's PG-13. But they do a really good job.
I might do that because I did have a soft spot for, and I'm ashamed to admit this, basically all the Final Destination movies.
Those
are for teenagers. They just are.
Right.
I went and saw one of those movies in a theater by myself, basically, with 3D glasses on. I kind of felt like a bigger loser.
You know which one you went to? That was the roller coaster one, wasn't it?
No, it was. I think it was the fourth or fifth installment. Fourth or fifth.
So what's your rating on Happy Death Day?
I gave it a 3.5. And by the way, the Final Destination movies are awesome. I'm with you, man. The first one, what a great concept. And like the crazy thing about those movies, Cakes, is like you know someone's about to die.
Yeah.
You kind of start figuring out ways, is this person going to somehow get out? I don't know which one it was. Remember the person put her hand in the garbage disposal?
I think it was guy who put his hand in because he lost like a fancy ring. And
I
get nervous.
The kitchen catches fire, then it's a show.
Yeah. All right, so what's the last movie?
The last movie is Isn't It Romantic? So essentially, Rebel Wilson's character hits her head, wakes up in a romantic comedy that happens to be PG-13.
And Rebel Wilson is Fat Amy from Pitch Perfect.
Exactly, yeah, and she's awesome. She's a really, really funny actress. She owns this role. I don't know if you guys remember this movie called Not Another Teen Movie. It had Chris Evans, and it was like back in the early 2000s, I think. Yeah, and I love that film. And I've seen it a million times because I think it's hilarious. So this reminded me very heavily of it, almost to a point where the jokes almost were exact. This is essentially, it makes fun of romantic comedies, like all the little tropes and the cliches, the montages. But her character wakes up in a romantic comedy and everything's perfect. And Liam Hemsworth's character is like wants to date her. And Priyanka Chopra is in the film as well. I mean, it works, but I didn't love it. It's definitely not something I probably would, you know, go back and see, but I gave it a 3. It's fine. It works, but it's not like mind-blowingly great. So,
thank you, Kevin.
No problem. I love you guys.
Have a good weekend, sir.
Enjoy the next Florida versus Florida game.
Yes, have fun with that.
That's Kevin McCarthy.
Is Kevin nearing 40? He's got to be getting close to it.
Might be like mid-30s.
Where is he in relation to you, Valdez? Because you're like 35.
I'm 35.
How old is Valdez?
He's probably 31.
I'm 31.
Okay. How old is Grant?
I'm like 36.
I'm 36.
Okay. I'm on stilts.
It doesn't matter. I'm older than you. I'm a lot older than you.
I think Kevin's 35.
Kevin's about 35.
35, yeah. 34.
Okay. Okay. You don't think Valdez has an old soul?
Does he look older than me?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
With the hats on, you got to take your hats off.
That's why I don't like to take my hat off.
I mean, I would think the Trav was older.
Just because of the bald?
Yes.
That doesn't mean anything. Kids in their 20s
are bald.
You can
say it doesn't mean anything. That's how I would judge it.
Yeah. Yeah, remember, Ewad was bald and he was 21. Yeah.
That's fine. Young guys can be bald.
It's a factor.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the faces. Look at the hair. Yeah, but
Belly just looks like, looks like you've been through a war.
John Feinstein joins us, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist. He's on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, and he's brought to you by Golfdom, located in Tysons, Virginia. Or golfdomgolf.com. Visit today to experience the best in golf on and off the course. Golfdom, live the game. And we wanted to start with a golf question for you, John. We've been kind of debating the whole Matt Kuchar thing. What's your take on the $5,000 tip, or whatever you call it, to his caddy when he makes $1.3 million?
This could be a long conversation, John. I want to get all the background, everything you know.
I'm going to bet that you and I, Eric, will disagree, because most of the time we do.
I doubt it. But maybe.
Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, John.
All right, let me start out with this. I'm biased because I like Matt Kuchar a lot.
Yeah.
I've known him since 98 when he played so well as an amateur at the Masters and U.S. Open.
Right.
He's one of the good guys on tour. He's got a great sense of humor. He's extremely quotable. If you were to read the first major, you'd see some of the best stories in the book are involve Kuchar. And in fact, I just finished a Golf Digest piece on him, just as this story was first breaking a month ago.
Right.
So that's my
bias
disclaimer.
Yeah.
Here's how it works, and I know you guys are probably familiar with this on tour. If you are a regular tour caddy, you usually have an annual deal with your player. And it can vary, but generally speaking, you get paid a certain flat fee for every week, you know, regardless if the guy misses the cut, whatever. And if you make the cut and you're not top 10, you usually get 5% of what a player makes. If you're in the top 10, you usually get 7%. And if you win, it's usually 10%. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes it's a little less, depending, again, on the deal the player has with the caddy. Matt Kuchar was on vacation with his family in Mexico. He often plans to play in places that are resorts that'll be nice for his wife and his kids. He's got two boys who are 11 and 9. They travel. The boys travel with Matt and his wife, Sibby, all the time. They're not homeschooled, but they take a tutor with them all the time. Rather than have them go to school. Matt and Sibby think they're getting more of an education traveling the world than they would be in a school in Sea Island, Georgia, where they live. When they get a little older, they'll probably in high school, they'll go to regular school. All right, so that's a lot more background than you need. Matt hires this guy. He's a local caddy. He gave his normal caddy, John Wood, the week off, and they agree to $3,000. Matt wins. He gives him $5,000. He thinks that's fair. The caddy doesn't speak much English. Basically, he's carrying the bag. He's not reading any putts. He's not clubbing him. Matt knows the golf course, and he gives him $5,000. Now, on a percentage basis of what Matt made, what was $1.25 million, of course that's way low, way low. And probably he should have given him more. He should have just said, hey, I just made all this money. I'm going to give the guy $25,000. I'm making up a number. Could have been 30, 40, 20, whatever. But he didn't do it. He felt like, I made a deal. This is what the guy is worth, and I gave him an extra $2,000. And look, I'm the guy who always stands up for the little guy, and in this case, the caddy is the little guy. And I think I'm a pretty good tipper. I'm not Phil Mickelson, but I tend to tip over 20% in restaurants, and sometimes more than that if it's somebody I know or if they did something special. Again, I'm not Phil Mickelson, but I'm not Tiger Woods either. So my inclination would be that Matt should have given him more. But the flip side is this is basically what would have been the going rate. And here's what I'll say to you guys. I understand why everybody's saying, hey, he made 1.25 and he only gave him 5,000, although they did eventually offer another 15. Mm-hmm. But if you go into a bar and you guys make good money, I make good money. We don't make Matt Kuchar money, but we make good money. You go into a bar and you order a glass of wine, and it's $20 for the glass of wine, and it's, you know, just a normal, ordinary wine. Do you want to pay that $20, or do you say to the bartender, $20 for this? It isn't because you can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. You know, I had breakfast in a restaurant in Boston a couple weeks ago. I was at the Marriott Long Wharf, one of my favorite hotels in the world. And I walked in and I ordered breakfast. I'd walked through the North End, so I thought I was entitled to a breakfast. And I ordered French toast and I asked for some fruit. And they brought me some fruit. And when I got the bill, the fruit was $17.
Right. Wow.
It was $17 for, you know, like six strawberries and, right. you know, three pieces of cantaloupe and, you know, right. like that.
That's quite a markup. And,
yeah. Now, I didn't complain because it wasn't worth complaining. And again, can I afford to pay that $17? Sure. But it kind of ticked me off.
Right.
So I see both sides of this. I see why the guy would feel like I'd like to make a lot of money on this because it's a chance to change my life, which I'm sure it would be.
Right.
But I also see Matt's point of view.
Well, the problem is I generally agree with you.
I must be wrong.
I generally agree with you in the sense that, I mean, he should have given him more. I might even give him a little more than 15 or 20. But the problem is with the quotes that Matt's come out with. It makes it seem like he's treating him like the help. And it's just not a good look.
Yeah, and again, I think Matt feels, again, I haven't talked to him about this since this week. I think he feels like he's sort of been, you know, that he's being attacked from behind on this. Like, it happened, 3 months ago now? The tournament was in November.
He doesn't want to bow to the pressure. I get it.
Yeah, and people are saying, oh, you're a terrible guy because you're rich and you didn't give this guy more money. And Matt's attitude is, look, I paid him a fair amount of money. And I think he probably did, especially if they'd thrown in the extra 15 grand that apparently Steinberg offered. And I'm sure that came from Matt to offer the extra 15 grand. But I do agree with you that there's a tone here that doesn't come off well.
Yes.
And again,
especially with golf,
I like Matt Kuchar a lot.
Yeah.
I think, you know, honestly, if I were in his position now, I would probably turn around and say, you know what, I've thought about it, and I'm going to write a check for 50 grand.
Exactly.
And because he can write a check for 50 grand like we write a check for $500.
Right. And it's easy for us to spend other people's
money. I really didn't think I was wrong, but I'm hearing what people are saying, and I don't want to come off as, I've heard him called now in the last few days, El Cheapo.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. Just give the guy the money and put it to rest.
Yeah, just say, listen, you know what? I hear you guys, and maybe I did make a mistake. I really didn't think I did. I thought I made a good deal. I thought it was a fair deal. But maybe you're right. Maybe I did make a mistake, and you know what? This could maybe really help him and change his life, so I'm going to do this. And I'm going to write him a check for 50K or whatever.
Right.
And
now, he's probably ticked off at the guy for going public the way he did, and that's why he's thinking, I don't want to change his life. But I agree with you. I think that would be the thing to do.
Because this is going to take him forever.
And you know what? The thing is, it's unfair, but this will be part of Matt Kuchar's legacy.
Yep. Forever.
Absolutely.
It will be. And that's what happens with these things. That, you know, it's like and this is a different circumstance, but Billy Buckner boots that ball in the 86 World Series. He's a Gold Glove first baseman.
Yeah.
Who had almost 20, he was borderline Hall of Famer. He had 2,700 hits. And yet the only thing 99% of the people who've ever watched a baseball game think of when they think of Billy Buckner is booting that ball. Matt Kuchar has been an excellent player on the PGA Tour. You know, he's won, I think, 10 times now. He's been on four Ryder Cup teams and is considered one of the good guys. I mean, one of the good guys out there. And yet, this won't go away unless he decides to turn around and say, you know what, I made a mistake.
I'm sure you got a kick out of, I think it was, is the guy's name Mark Conazzaro that wrote that article for the Post?
New York Post, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, look, Tiger botched his whole affair, scandal thing, press conference, all of that.
Right, you know, was a little bit of a bigger deal, but true.
True, but he botched the handling, the PR of the whole situation.
He did.
And Cooch is botching this, and they're both managed by Mark Steinberg.
Another guy that you love, John, Mark Steinberg. Well,
Mark and I actually buried the hatchet a few years ago.
Yeah, good.
But I will say, you know, when the whole Tiger thing happened, I wrote that Tiger should fire everybody who works for him and bring in a whole, you know, brand new people and bring in somebody who would tell him when he was screwing up. And Mark came up to me that year at the Masters and he said, you know, just so you know, I didn't know a thing about what was going on. And I said, Mark, if you knew what was going on, you should be fired. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know what was going on, you should be fired twice because that's your job, you know, to know what's going on in Tiger Woods' life, for God's sake. But you're right. There is a commonality there. And Steinberg represents a bunch of football players now, too, by the way. He's been very successful since he left IMG. But, yeah, I mean, again, that's where, and I'm sure I'll have this conversation with Mark at some point, that's where Mark should have said to Cooch what I just said, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, let's just write him a check for $50,000 and be the good guys in this.
Yeah. Talking to John Feinstein, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist. I actually had a little Twitter back and forth. Actually, I didn't have a back and forth with John, but he chimed in because I put a poll about the AAF in.
Yeah.
And you
resist.
Seem to have some hostility towards it. I didn't even watch it myself.
Hostility.
Here's the thing.
No,
I didn't watch
hostility.
It myself.
It's just that, do we really need another minor football league? That's what this is. I mean, right. I don't care what the TV ratings were. The XFL had great ratings the first couple of weeks, too.
Yeah.
By the
true.
Way.
Of course.
And I just, look, I think the coverage of the NFL, as you guys know, is just overblown beyond belief. You know, like when it's a big story, when they unveil their schedule every year in April, and the coverage of the draft. I mean, you would think it was what's going on in Congress now in terms of importance with the president. So when people are, you know, CBS is promoting the league like it's something that's a big deal and stuff like that. Yeah, I get a little bit cynical. You guys know I can be a little bit of a curmudgeon every once in a while.
Just a little.
Just well, a little.
Here's the thing, John.
And by the way, I will say this. On Sunday afternoon, I was at the George Mason LaSalle game, which, by the way, was a very good game. And I came home, and I turned on the TV, I'm flipping around, and the golf is way behind because of the hail delay.
Right.
And somehow, I don't even know what network it was on, but I got to one of these AAF games, and my good friend Ben Holden, who's done Army football now for 8 or 9 years, is doing play-by-play. So I paused for a minute, and I watched one play. And on this one play, they throw a deep ball downfield, and a guy dives for it, and it's close, whether he caught it or not. So they go to replay. Mike Singletary was coaching one of the teams,
yeah.
And he throws the red flag, and they say, "Oh!" And Ben says, "Oh, the way we do replay in the AAF, it's so great, it's so different." And they show the replay guy on camera,
yeah.
And he's mic'd,
yeah.
And he's looking at his play, and you can see clearly the guy dropped the ball. You can see it. He
at the
dropped
very end,
the ball.
You could see it.
And the announcers say, "Oh, he dropped the ball. This can be overruled." You know, and so you hear the guy say, "Well, I can't see clearly whether it was a catch or a drop, so we're going to have to let it stand." And whoever he's talking to says, "Well, everybody down here thinks he dropped it." And the guy says, yeah, okay, the catch stands. And I'm thinking, okay, that's enough. I've seen enough of this.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, I did see that sequence. I thought it was comical. And I don't think they had many
camera
angles.
That's the word. It was comical.
But I would think you'd like it because of the underdog factor. You got all these guys that are trying to make their way. You know, these underdogs have been cut.
Yeah, and look, I wrote this the other day, or said this on one of my CBS Minutes. I think, you know, it's good for all these guys who have a chance to play.
Right.
And they have a chance to get an NFL team notice them. That's what NFL Europe was.
Right.
And that's all fine. Just don't ask me to watch. That's what I always say. About different sports that I'm not interested in, okay? There are people, as you know, who think soccer is the greatest sport in the world, and anybody who doesn't understand and appreciate the beauty of the game is an idiot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get tweets about that all the time. You're an idiot because you don't love soccer. I don't hate soccer. I watch the World Cup. I'll occasionally watch an MLS game. But please don't tell me there's something wrong with me because I don't want to sit and watch, you know, all the European Premier League games, which is the best league in the world, that are on TV now. I just don't have time to watch that many nil-nil games or one-nil games.
You don't want to watch Tottenham Hotspur on a Saturday morning.
I'm actually a Tottenham fan because one of my best friends, a rules official, John Paramore on the PGA Tour, is a Spurs fan. So I kind of pull for Tottenham.
That was just random.
Well, John, enjoy the NBA All-Star game
yes,
this weekend.
All the
I know
events.
You're a big
is that this
dunk.
Weekend?
It is, yes. I know you're a big dunk contest fan, three-point contest fan.
The celebrity
fan.
All-Star game.
Hey, come on. Big news last night. The Knicks won a game.
They did? What are they doing?
The Knicks won a game.
That was stupid of them.
They're now 2-26 in their last 28 games. The once proud New York Knicks. And everybody in New York thinks that Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Zion Williamson are going to be playing for the Knicks next year. Hold your breath.
Delusional.
Crazy. All right. Thank you, John. Have a good weekend.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right. Thank you. John Feinstein. So there you go. We agree on the Cooch thing. He wants to give him the benefit of the doubt, which I think we all do because he's got a reputation for being a good guy.
Joining us right now on the Maps Express Hotline is our buddy Rick Snyder. He's going to join us momentarily. Rick Snyder from 106.7 The Fan and the Washington Post Express. And apparently he is on now.
Very good.
What's up, Rick?
Another beautiful day, boys.
Oh, look at you being Johnny Positive.
Yeah. Yeah, new lease on life.
Yeah, so I'm perusing the net, and I see the headline that came out in the past few days that Governor Larry Hogan is basically telling the Redskins that he's withdrawing the effort to build the new stadium at the Maryland site near MGM National Harbor at this time. So it looks like Daniel Snyder's options are dwindling at this point as to where he's going to put his new stadium.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's down to D.C., and D.C. doesn't even have the land to give them. They have to extend the lease to the federal government to be able to offer it. And, you know, that's going to take a while, too. So nothing's going to be resolved, I think, for a while. They were this close getting it through a bill back in December before the shutdown happened. And now this could take a couple more years. And, you know, something I pitched out there just for the heck of it, Jack Kent Cook thought about leaving during his stadium struggles. He thought about going to L.A. George Preston Marshall nearly sold the team before he ended up pulling out and the deal and, you know, end up getting RFK. So does Dan Snyder think about leaving at some point, you know, London Redskins? And I put up a Twitter poll. 3,200 people voted, which is a lot for me. 72% said leave and we'll take an expansion team in a few years.
Wow. Man, that is an unbelievable number.
I mean, Twitter's the land of the angry. There's no doubt. But but still, it shocked me that three times the people, they all said, if it gets rid of Dan Snyder, I'm fine with it. I'll skip a few years, start over.
But I don't blame Larry Hogan for his stance. He doesn't want to soak his constituents for paying for a stadium or paying for most of it with state taxpayer money. I don't blame him for his stance.
No, I mean, but I don't know that he ever was going to do this. I heard a year ago the Maryland Stadium Authority pretty much decided they weren't going to invest in another Redskins stadium because they were going to concentrate on Baltimore, and they just saw that FedEx was a bad deal financially for the state. They didn't want to do it again. But Hogan, sometimes politicians, you make the effort to say, well, you know, I tried. But getting that land from the feds, which I didn't know, I picked this spot 5 years ago. I didn't know it was a federal land. They had to swap it with Northern Maryland. Those people were against it, too. This was a long shot. Plus, you know, Hogan and Trump aren't going to do any favors. So I think it was more of a face-saving move, or if they could get that land, who knows what they would use it for, because the environmentalists were lined up against the stadium. I don't think in the end it was ever really going to happen.
What is the timeline anyway? We've been talking about this new stadium for years. How much longer are they locked into FedEx? Well,
they're at 2027, I believe, is the lease.
Yeah, seven years.
They have to play there at least the first two games. Somehow this is written. The first two games of 2027. And then they could go to a new stadium in midseason if they want. But, you know, you need about 3 years to get a stadium deal done and built. So you still got about 4 or 5 years to mess around. And it might take a couple. If D.C. was smart and they really wanted this deal, which I'm not sure they do, but if they did, cut the deal now and say, okay, we'll work out the land issues later. But lock it in now at a cheaper price, because Virginia, Maryland, you never know. They could come back into this at some point. But Amazon pretty much took the Redskins stadium money away in Virginia. You know, that's a big investment by the state up here. And I've been told they don't want to do another one like this.
Well, they could always back out because they backed out of New York, right?
Well, you know, we'll see what happens there. But so far, it's holding up that Amazon's coming to Virginia. So that takes away some of the options for the Redskins there. Yeah, they're suddenly, you know, down the last card. They could always stay at FedEx. You know, nobody likes the place. But why does nobody like the place? Because they lose more than anything. RFK was not a palace, you know.
No, certainly not.
It's not like land, you know, like FedEx is falling down on people or anything. You know, but they have a losing record now at FedEx after all these years. So that's why people hate it.
Talking to Rick Snyder, you can read his work at thefandc.com and Washington Post Express as well. So we were kind of kicking around our guess as to who the Redskins' starting quarterback is going to be come week one. Who is Rick Snyder's best guess? Who will be the week one starter?
Well, that's a good poll, too. I guess, as we stand today, McCoy. But could it be a rookie draft pick? But yeah, I'd say 50-50 on that right now. I don't see them trading for anybody. I mean, who are you going to trade for? And, you know,
well,
it's not
Josh. The money. That's why, like, we didn't understand why everybody was all into the Joe Flacco deal. Like, it just wasn't realistic.
Or even Case Keenum. No. They don't even have money for that.
Right. They need a $3 to $5 million quarterback to sign. Could be Teddy Bridgewater, maybe. But that's about it. I mean, anybody else is awful. He wants to keep Colt, you know, at this point. At least he knows the system. If Colt could stay healthy, maybe he could be by for a little while. But I think if you draft a rookie in the first, which they may, you might just go ahead and play him, you know, and get him ready to go for when he really can.
That's what I'd like to do.
They're in a three-year rebuild again. And when that three-year rebuild comes through, is Trent still here? Is Jordan still here? Is Ryan Kerrigan still here? You know, they're getting old and battered. Not Ryan, but the other two. You know, I mean, this team's talent is thin.
Isn't it about as thin as you can remember?
No, I've seen worse. But,
really?
The early 90s, after the Super Bowl team all retired out, oh, they had nothing in the 90s for a long time. But this is definitely, you know, there's no Pro Bowlers.
There's no star players,
I should say.
Yeah, I mean, other than Ryan, I guess. Ryan's their biggest star.
No, but he's not an all-pro.
Yeah.
And do you think people sit there like J.J. Watt and think, what are we going to do this week against this guy?
Yeah. No, of course not. It's just a shame, too. I've never seen him this devoid of talent at the skill positions either. That's the thing.
Well, they're definitely low at receiver. Running back, you know, let's think Geist comes back and can be a good player. So you're okay there.
Yeah, but he's not going to be 100%. Even if he comes back, right. He's good. It's going to take a while.
Right, and you have Peterson probably resigning to help out a little bit there. They're okay running back. If you can keep that line healthy, it's okay. You really don't have much of a receiver. You only have much of a quarterback. So you better hope you can bang away, you know, run for some yards this year.
Right. All right, Rick. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
That's right. Rick Snyder.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.